Which is something we've talked about for weeks with this team throughout the postseason run. They are just too sloppy. You can't play like that and give away possessions in a game that's going to come down to two or three possessions, as it has with this entire Pacers series. So that would be my biggest issue with the Knicks last night.
Really frustrating. The bottom line for me, Sal, is that the Knicks' strengths, and we all know what they are not good enough to cover up their weaknesses. And we all know what those are. That's my takeaway. Like, we watch every second, you know, starting with the Pistons series, and we know what the Knicks do well. And we know they don't do well. And unfortunately for them, and obviously as a byproduct to us, they have not been able to, you know, impose their will long enough against really good teams like Indiana to continue doing what they do well long enough to win. And what the weaknesses are, and again, it's mostly defensively, but the sloppiness with the ball, you're right. Their passing has been a mess lately. They just can't. It's like you patch up one hole, here's some more water, patch this up, here's more. Not good enough. Well, not better than Indiana.
The Pacers' star player was better than the Knicks' star players last night. The Knicks were way sloppier with the ball. The Knicks did not shoot the ball well. And I don't care what the final score said. Like, oh, yeah, they scored 120 points.
Yeah, I know.
Their offense is not good enough. How many shots do we got to watch missed in the first half of the first quarter? Really, that game, you could argue, was lost in the first quarter. But how many shots we got to see missed by Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Cole Anthony Towns not shooting enough three-pointers? I still don't like the way that they're using them. The Knicks are a jumbled mess. Now, I still don't think the series is over, but we can get to that a little bit later on. But as a individual game last night, Knicks got to play better basketball. End of story. Can't get a stop, can't protect the basketball, can't get a big shot. Like, how are you supposed to win games like that?
You know what I don't get? So, it really hit me last night. And you and I have reacted to some of the post-game comments by some of the players that it's come across as very alarming, like, to, you know, whether it's Josh Hart, Bridges last night, and we didn't match their intensity. Like, I think we all know, and we've heard that a few times during the postseason here, going back to the Pistons series, we all know that, you know, they don't defend the pick and roll, and their wings are unreliable shooting the ball, and then they don't have a point guard depth, and they don't have the... We all know what they don't have. What I didn't know that they didn't have was a championship mindset. I thought this team had more focus, and I thought this team had more heart. Why in the world is Tom Thibodeau, and I appreciate this from him, because you can see him coaching his guts out, even though I've been critical, that one sequence, I think they came back from commercial, he's like, guys, we got to sprint back. Sprint, we're better than this. Sprint back. I mean, you're yelling at guys to run, to sprint up and down the court to get back defensively in transition. That should be a prerequisite. And then you give up 43 in the first quarter, which tells me you're not ready to go. And then again, the same nonsense post game. They were a little tougher, they're a little stronger, a little physicality, whatever they use to explain it away. That has really jumped out to me. I know they've got some basketball deficiencies. Every team does. They're not a championship mindset. They're just not.
But isn't that something that we've kind of alluded to and watched, trying to see it develop throughout the course of the year? When you bring in two big players like Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges and change the infrastructure of this team, it sometimes it takes time. And we've tried to watch this team gel where it just never felt cohesive at all throughout the course of the regular season. And I was saying, I want to see it in the postseason. I want to see what happens when Mitchell Robinson comes back and they're fully healthy. Well, now we've seen it for this is the third series that we're watching it. And while there may be improvements, there's still something off about this team. If they have to yell at each other, I'm not saying like the incident on the bench that we talked about the other day. That happens normally throughout the course of a series, throughout the course of a game.
I like that, actually. It shows some. I have no problem with that.
But it is a constant with this team that there's finger pointing and you're not doing this and you're not chasing that and you're not following or rushing back. Like, that should not be the case. Too many times, the Knicks, specifically defensively, have not been cohesive enough, and I would further it and say offensively, which is supposed to be their strength. You know, you started talking about, well, their strengths. Well, what is their strength exactly? We mentioned this a little bit yesterday. It's supposed to be offense. The Knicks were not built to be a defensive juggernaut. They were supposed to be a team that can score the basketball with efficiency, with multiple options.
Sure.
And we have not seen that nearly enough. To me, the best, quarter, but even half or three quarters was game one of this series where there was ball movement. There was penetration and kicking out to the guys beyond the arc, knocking down the threes. That should be the Knicks offense. And it comes and goes. And then it's one-on-one ball. You saw it with Bridges last night down the stretch for some odd reason on a team with Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. They're featuring Mikal Bridges. Like, what is exactly the Knicks' identity, specifically offensively?
Well, you raised a good point yesterday because you talked about that and you further, we went through some of the teams here, right?
So yeah.
Like when you think of a team, even Yankee teams that didn't win built on power, right? Or the St. Louis Cardinals built on speed with, you know, back in the day in the 80s. Like, you generally know what you are and who you are. Pistons are built on physicality. The Celtics shoot the heck out of it, both in terms of volume and in terms of makes. And the Pacers, their objective is to get the ball and score in 3, 4, 5 seconds. And they've got a lot of smart, interchangeable shooters and pieces, and they all fit. That's clearly their identity. When you ask what's the Knicks' identity, my answer is probably hope that Jalen Brunson drops 45 and hope that he carries you to a win and the other guys aren't too deficient, like that the performances aren't so up and down where they're just good enough to allow Brunson's heroics to win.
The identity,
and I think you got it.
The identity is the individual star power that Brunson has, that Cat has, that maybe Bridges could have on any given night. That's it. But it hasn't been cohesive at all. You know what the Pacers are going to do, and they do it. Some nights, maybe it's not going to be to the level of other nights. Mm-hmm. Maybe that leads to a loss like it did in Game 3. But you know what they're going to do. Celtics, same thing. You know what they're going to do. The injuries maybe prevent other things. I have no idea what we're getting into every night with the Knicks. You hope. You think what might happen. I don't think they know. And that's the bigger issue. They don't know. They're trying to figure out who they are.
And to do that in the Eastern Conference Finals generally is a recipe to get sent home fairly quick. I mean, you're down, 69-64 at the half, right? We've talked all year about, at least in the playoffs, their third quarter issues. They've been open about that. They've tried to change things in a locker room. They've come out. They've hit the layup line. They've tried to be more engaged. What happens? Bang, you get hit with a quick 7-0 run. Like, they were against you. There were so many things that I just didn't understand. OG Anunoby caught the basketball. I feel like it was 4 or 5 times under the rim, and he just wouldn't shoot. Like, he's walking on eggshells, man. And last night was rough, dude. And I'm sitting there, and I'm watching the Knicks offense, stagnant, dribble, corner, pinch, double team, pick and roll, sloppy mess. And then I watch the Pacers rebound 3 seconds up court layup.
Right.
Like, it's amazing to know, and I know that Tom Thibodeau clearly points this out to him, that they are going to push, and they still don't get back.
Well, think about it specifically with Anunoby. What do you think Anunoby's strengths are offensively?
What he got here is definitely shooting, because he puts the ball on the floor. I think he's a wreck. He's got no handle.
Correct. Remember, we had this debate last year where I was saying, oh, man, he can't. So now you're referencing examples. And by the way, this is not just him trying to create inside the paint or whatever.
No, catch a pass and just go up, dude.
I don't want Anunoby in the paint. He should be on the perimeter. To me, same thing with Karl Anthony Towns. I know Kat, and look, he could have some strong moves, and we've seen it down low.
Yeah.
I want him playing on the perimeter. That, to me, is the strength. Now, maybe eventually it's going to lead to a different coach. And, you know, I love Tibbs maybe more so than you or more than most. But if he's not maximizing their skill set or figuring out where each player's strength is and how to make the most of it, then maybe they need to find somebody who can, because I don't want Anunoby in the paint. I don't want Karl Anthony Towns trying to play bully ball where he's out of control and hooking arms.
All night hooking.
Oh, my God, dude.
I don't feel sorry for him. I mean, there was a sequence where he played a good 8 or 9 minutes straight, and he was balling, right? And he was exhausted. He was tapped out. There was nothing left in his tank, and he earned a little respite there to get on the bench. But during you get that second foul 3 minutes into the game, dude, you know how important you are. And part of it is because, again, the Knicks defense is a mess and he's out of position and he's not quick and he's reaching and he's all tripped up, and that's where you get cheap fouls. But I saw at least 4 replays. He's doing the same hook move where he's trying to hook, whether it's Miles Turner.
Yeah.
They're going to call you on that. A few times they didn't.
Yeah, I know.
Amazingly they didn't. But it's a laziness and it's a sloppiness. And it's a failure to recognize what they're doing. Like, the Pacers, Sal, have not deviated really from their approach from the opening tip of game 1.
Right.
Whereas every game for the Knicks, it's like a new recipe, whether it's new players, whether it's new sets, run the ball through Towns, run it through Brunson, run it through Bridges late. They were a mess. They're not winning the series. I mean, they're not winning the series.
All right, it's not over yet. Not over
Did you
yet.
Notice how I hesitated? I was just about to say hard, it's over. I don't even want to say
I know.
Because I do think that they could scrap together a win tomorrow, and then who the hell knows? But man, it is ominous. The Pacers are absolutely better.
The Knicks are a maddening basketball team to watch because they should be better than what they are.
That's the word that you used last night. We were doing those reactions. That's the first thing you said. They're maddening. They're maddening because you never know what you're going to get. They're unreliable emotionally, and they're unreliable from a schematical point of view. That's not good.
BT and Sal on the fan. Let's get some calls in here. BT, 888-808-1019. Reacting to game 4 last night. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Brad is calling from Mineola. What's up, Brad?
Gentlemen, I don't want to do what you did, BT, and honestly, I do think they win tomorrow. They find a way because they're not going to lose 3 games at home, but who knows? I don't want to say it's over. I want to think that we can get to a 6th game in Indy, and who knows? Maybe there will be a game 7. But I'm looking at the box score from last night, and honestly, this is the game. 17 turnovers from the Knicks, 11 turnovers by the Pacers. We got outscored by 13 points and fast break points. You know when most of those points were? The ends of the quarters.
Yes.
Quarter one, the game's close.
Yeah.
Quarter one, the game's close. They have a run. Quarter two, we're up 1 with 1.5 minutes left in the second quarter. We ended down 5. The difference is that they scored 7 straight in quarter 3, and we never could get off the ground. And I'm sorry to say it, but that fourth quarter was officiated wrong, and I hate to bring up the officials. I hate to bring up the refs, but 3 of the 4 fouls that put us into the penalty in that fourth quarter were not fouls.
Refs stunk last night, but it's not an excuse. But the refs stunk again. The refs were bad last night.
But I don't think it was bad to the point where it cost the Knicks. Like in game 1, I do think that the whistle went the Pacers' way. And if one call goes the Knicks' way, they win that game. That's how big of a lead they had. That's how incredible of a comeback.
Yeah. The goaltend was egregious. Yeah, I mean, that was just horrendous.
It changed the whole game.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, the Knicks might have single-handedly, even before that. Now, again, Carlisle was smarter with his challenges in game 1.
Yep.
And if he didn't have those challenges, the Knicks would have benefited from that. They didn't. Whatever. They lost game 1. I don't think last night was a clear, the officials cost the Knicks. You mentioned it with Towns before. He was getting the benefit of the whistle as well. Tibbs was good with the challenge twice last night.
He nailed them.
I can't say.
And he got a lot of foul shots, Knicks. They took a ton.
Yeah, so I can't say that the whistle cost the Knicks last
night. No, I'm not saying it cost them. I'm definitely, but it didn't seem. You're right. I mean, nothing else did. It didn't cost them. It wasn't egregious, but I'm watching the game. I'm like, they missed that. Now, if I'm sitting there and I'm a Pacers fan, do I have a similar mindset? Maybe I'm wrapped up in the fandom, but I believe that I'm usually able in real time to do that. Like, that's a good call. That's a bad call. Even if the Knicks got hosed or got the benefit, like, I'm generally pretty fair to myself with that. I didn't think that they were great, but the bottom line is that here we are. And 1 year after this team lost in 7 games, okay, to the same team. And I pulled up the box score from last year's game 7 when they got drilled 130, whatever it was. Pascal Siakam, Nesmith, Turner, Nebhart, Tyrese Halliburton, Obi Toppin. These are all guys who played. Ben Shepherd, TJ McConnell. It's the same exact team. What's different with the Knicks?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, are you telling me that the Knicks are getting beat backdoor if Hartenstein's on the court? He's not. Like, they're just. This is the worst good defensive team I've ever seen.
You know, it's also not the starting lineup where people tried to make that the excuse. Well, the starts have been slow. Starting lineup, change it. You've seen the starts here, whether it's the third quarter, whether it's the start of the game.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That doesn't do it.
No, I don't. That's why I don't really know. I don't think Tom Thibodeau's coached a good series. I think Carlisle's absolutely better. But to be fair to Tom Thibodeau, I don't know that there's much more that he could do. Now, you and I were texting. I'm like, we'll save this for the show.
Yes.
Obviously, to me, give DeLon Wright a little bit more. I know you laugh at the Shamit stuff. But at one point, I'm looking at this, and I'm like, all right, Wright's plus 8, Shamit's plus 7. I don't need a lineup of, I don't want to see why am I forgetting the kid from Marquette? Jeez, not Tyler Kolek.
Kolek,
right? I don't need a rotation of him and bringing back Jericho Sims. But to me, when you've got a couple of guys on the court and the numbers are what they are and there's a favorable plus when they're on the court, Why not run him out there a little more? Why?
We'll have that conversation because I do want to get into some detail about that. We'll do that coming up here. Let's get Ed in West Hampton coming in. What's up, Ed?
Hey, guys.
What's up, Ed?
Hey, Eddie.
All right, Ron is in Baltimore. What's up, Ron?
Hey, good morning, BT and Sal. You need as much ball handling, shooting, and defense on the floor against this Pacers team. To me, Deuce McBride, yeah, he had a bad turnover. I watch Deuce McBride every game. He's a quick pass, shoot, dribble guy. I think he needed more minutes in this series. Hart's a non-shooter. He can't dribble. The double big lineup doesn't work against this Pacers team. This, to me, needed to be a Deuce McBride at least 25 minutes a night series. I want him to start game five. The problem is, and you hit on it, Sal, this was supposed to be an offensive maximization team. You needed to get the best out of OG, Bridges, Cat, and Brunson. They didn't embrace a five-out offense. When your two stars are liabilities on defense, the only way this works is if you get the most out of the offensive talent.
Correct. I'll let you go, Ron, because you're a terrific caller so far. It's infuriating to me. You just nailed it. Now, that may not be good enough, ultimately, but that's what they're supposed to be doing, and they're not doing it. It drives me nuts.
While I thank Mr. Thibodeau for building the winning culture, he deserves to lose his job at the end of the season when they lose the series. I need it to be a high assist, 25 to 30 assist night team. I needed to get Bridges, everybody, the Rock, on the perimeter, and to be a five-out spacing team. Yes, defensively, we are atrocious. We have to fix the bench. We have to get a coach that can play the bench. But I didn't see it. He doesn't treat the regular season the right way. That's not the Super Bowl. The regular season is to figure out the lineups and to figure out what works when it really matters. Deuce McBride needs to start game five. I would have started him game three, but Tibbs doesn't learn from pressure series like Miami and Indiana. Have a good day, guys.
I love you, man. Deuce. He didn't play well last night. I love him. I'm a huge fan. I think he's got a big future with the Knicks here. And if there is a coaching change, and we'll obviously hit that bigger picture moving forward, I think Deuce's role would explode. But he was off last night. There was one pass. It was a give and go. Instead of taking a layup, he tried to pass it to the corner. You guys know the play I'm talking about. Intercepted easily. Pacers back the other way. Like, the Knicks were off on almost every single level last night. Nothing was really working. You give up almost 45 points in the first quarter. I mean, you're playing uphill the rest of the night.
Yeah, and Halliburton was near flawless.
Yeah, no turnovers.
And it was still a tight game. Like, it goes to show you that you can still win. You don't have to be perfect here. You can still win. But, my God, you got to do something right at some point. They never had a real strong stretch where you felt like they were in control. They got behind early in that first quarter, and they were chasing ever since the whole game. And obviously could never catch the Pacers. BT and Sal on the – or at least in the end. BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll continue the conversation. A couple things there, BT. I do want to get into more of the offense and what they're supposed to be, Tibbs. And then the stuff that we were texted about last night, we had the conversation all day yesterday. We'll have that again coming up in a little bit. That was a rough game last night where it never – you never felt like, at least I never felt like the Knicks were going to come back and win that game. It always felt out of control, even when they were making it closer and trying to chip away a little bit. I had hope that something was going to happen and still looking at the math thinking, all right, well, no lead is safe in the fourth quarter in today's NBA. But, God, they just could not get anything going with any consistency, and we've seen that far too often. Big picture, I'm not ready to give up on the season yet because you think about where – or on the series, I should say. You think about where we should be. They should have won game one. It should be 2-2 now coming back for game five. Mm-hmm. This happens throughout the course of a series. But you also see this team that has way too many deficiencies and way too many inconsistencies throughout the postseason.
They're just not that team that's good enough to win a championship. They're just not. So that doesn't mean that you abandon hope. I'm with you. Be watching tomorrow night hoping for a miracle. You know, I did that reaction video last night. Yeah. And not that I root for this or hope for this. You know, even if it means winning, I just don't believe in tempting fate like that. But, you know, you're an ankle sprained away from, honestly.
I did catch that.
You know, I don't want to speak that into existence, but.
I did catch that. Yeah. Who are you rooting for?
No, Halliburton? I'm not. All right. Siakam's killed us. Nah, I'm just kidding.
Dude, actually, let's re-rank right now real quick.
Oh, yeah, we did this before the series.
Right, and before the series, I think it was Brunson, Cat, Halliburton. I forget what else we had in there, but I think we both slept on Siakam a little bit.
Yeah.
If you had to re-rank right now the individual, I still think the Knicks have more talent than the Pacers, but I think the Pacers are just a better team, meaning they play the way that they want to play. They're more cohesive. The role players excel in their role.
Oh, there's no doubt that they definitely fit the parts better.
Right.
But I don't know that the Knicks have more well-rounded players. Because if you look at each play, forget about, I'm not talking about Brunson and Hart. Forget about the stars, right? But if you look at Brunson and Cat. But if you look at Hart, no handle, can't shoot. You look at Bridges, too often invisible early, and it just catches up with the team at the end. If you look at OG, doesn't finish around the rim, incredibly inconsistent from that, either red hot or ice cold. So I think that the other players for the Pacers, I don't think there's as many wild fluctuations in their night-to-night performance.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's what we're saying. The Knicks have too many deficiencies. If you had to rank it real quick right now, the top like five players in this series.
Top five? All right. So I'm going to go. I'm going to still go Brunson.
Okay.
I'm going to go Brunson one. I'm going to go Haliburton two. I'm going to go Siakam three. I'm going to go Cat four. And then I'd probably have to go. No, I don't want to go Miles Turner. I mean, maybe one of their guys.
Naismith?
Maybe. You know, he played so well early.
I mean, but these guys are
it's not. It's
not
Nebhart. I mean, maybe. Maybe now, I don't know.
Now, if you're building a team, it's different. Like, I wouldn't want Bridges. If I'm building a team, I'd take some role players. Because I'm not going to disagree with you. I'd have Siakam. I might have Siakam, too. Honestly, like I love Haliburton. The thing about Haliburton, I was just watching a clip. I guess he reached out to Sue Bird to figure out or get advice on when to become a scorer versus when to be a facilitator. Think about that. Think about that. From a point guard perspective, we talk about Brunson. We broke it down a lot yesterday.
Yeah.
Brunson is primarily a scorer, not necessarily a facilitator. There are nights where Haliburton, and we look at him like, oh, yeah, he scores 15 points or whatever. He doesn't have his impact. But last night, he came out with the mindset, I'm going to need to be a scorer tonight. And boom, he had a near-perfect game from start to finish. No turnovers, lighting it up, triple-double, big shots left and right. Like, no doubt about it. And then there are going to be nights where he's like, I don't need to go nuts and score right now. Mm-hmm. Let's get everybody else involved. Let's feed the beast in Siakam. Let's get Nesmith involved. Yep. Whatever it may be, Turner involved. That's what you want in a point guard.
You do, but Jalen doesn't have that other side of the coin. He just doesn't have that. I'm not saying he's never going to give you a pretty pass, no look, but no, I don't think Jalen Brunson is able to, even if he consciously went into the next game and said, you know what, I'm not looking to score 30, I'm dishing. I'm letting all the other guys get going. I don't think that he's able to set them up as well as Haliburton is.
Right.
There's no way.
Yeah, I still go Brunson 1, Haliburton 2. Siakam's got to be 3, though.
And he's played great. He's killed him. He's killed OG.
They have nobody to stop him.
I know.
Because they don't have a true power forward. It is maddening with this team. And the Knicks, what they're supposed to be doing well, I think that's the biggest point. Like, the Knicks are sloppy with the basketball. They're inconsistent. They do not play good defense at all. And they don't even do what they're supposed to be good at well enough. That's maybe the biggest issue. Like, at least you could say, well, they're flawed because they were built to be a good offensive team, but they play no defense, and that's going to be a problem where they're sloppy. But at least they're scoring a ton of points. You can't even say that. They're not a good shooting team.
They're not. And the crazy thing is, I think that they actually have, and this is probably a different, deeper conversation when we'll get back to the phones, obviously, but I think that they've got enough components where if they were utilized differently or properly, they would be a better defensive team. I don't think that they have 10 turnstiles, you know, in Knicks warm-up gear. I just think that they've got, you know, we said this yesterday, obviously. Their two best players are wretched defensively, and the other combinations don't work. And you don't trust the other guys enough who do play defense well to run them out there for 15 or 20 minutes.
And it would be okay. It might not still work, but it would be okay if their two best players were liabilities defensively, but were lights out offensively.
Yeah. And they don't even really, something else we had yesterday, they don't really complement each other very well. You know, if you think about this, for the most part, when Karl-Anthony Towns goes bonkers, it's throughout the playoffs. It's when Jalen Brunson's been on the bench and with fouls or just getting a rest, whatever. And when Jalen's going to get his, Cat's generally floating around aimlessly, not doing a whole lot.
BT and Sal on the fan. John is calling from Long Island. What's up, John?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's good up, buddy?
It's so frustrating to be watching that team. I'm a diehard Knicks fan, so a couple points here. I just still cannot get over how professional athletes say they weren't ready for the game. We're in the Eastern Conference Finals. How are we not ready for a game?
Yeah.
I'm
so tired of hearing that, John.
It's every game.
Oh, it's embarrassing. God,
right? Enough. Enough, right? Hart, last night, you know, all the jokes about, well, I don't watch film. If you say that, and then you have a stinker like you did yesterday, the turnovers, not playing defense, the fouls. I mean, we say he can't shoot, he can't dribble. So you got to do the other stuff, and everyone says he rebounds. Well, last night he turned the ball over I don't know who he was throwing the ball to half the time, right? But my main point is to get to the conversation about the defense, right? This is not championship defense, and they're not scoring, right? Brunson or Cat, it's not both. They can't be on the floor together, and it's a big dilemma, and that's why Mitch is in there to start,
yep.
Right? So what do we do? And Cat, I mean, I've never seen a seven-footer who can't rebound the ball, who can't post someone up he's got 50 pounds and 6 inches on.
It's amazing. Like,
he can't do it cleanly.
I don't understand.
That's it. You nailed it.
He could do it. And thanks, thank you, Cole, John.
Go ahead.
But BT, we've been talking about this with the elbows, this and that, and then the hook. Like, what the hell is he doing? I've never seen Ewing in my, now, again, it's 30 years ago. I don't recall ever seeing an issue. Ewing would get the ball, and he'd do his moves. I'm referencing Ewing because he's another Knicks big. Obviously, you could reference a million big guys, whoever you want to choose. I don't ever recall him hooking elbows, grabbing with the elbow up. Like, yeah, all right, maybe sometimes you go in with the way the ball is. You have your arms up, whatever, trying to. And back then, it was actually more legal than it is now. Karl Anthony Towns, it's like he's got the ball in one hand, and with the other hand, he's doing the Heisman and shielding guys off.
I know. It's, dude, there's a reason why there are elements of his game that are just soft. That's it. I mean, you bring up Patrick, and not only did Patrick, now, as Patrick got older, to be fair to the conversation, Patrick got pushed off his mark a little bit more because guys like Shaq came. Dude, Shaq. Right. But like David Robinson never pushed him off his post. Even Hakeem never really pushed him off his post. Hakeem's footwork was better, but Pat would still get settled and get to his spot. But those guys were big. They were equal 7 feet. Robinson a little bit thinner, but still similar physical characteristics. Karl Anthony Towns is like fighting tooth and nail, like he's losing a tug-of-war battle to bang somebody in the post who's 50 pounds lighter and 4 inches smaller.
And it's almost like he's okay with getting pushed back to the perimeter because he knows he can play out there. But that still, to me, is not acceptable, which is why I wouldn't mess with him down low. Dude, he's out of control down there.
Yeah.
The body control.
It's crazy, dude.
He doesn't do it clean. So, therefore, why would you try to jam a square peg in a round hole? Instead, he's a lights-out shooter from downtown.
Yeah, I know.
I want him shooting the basketball.
I do, too. But the problem is that I... See, okay, so... I like him in the post. Number one, it's a good look for him. He's a good foul shooter if they actually blow the whistle, like 80%. But I also think, now he doesn't, remember the other day I said he's a dumb basketball player? That came across very harsh in print, but it wasn't me mocking him or dissing him. I stand by that. He's not a smart basketball player because he doesn't read things quick. He's a brilliant person. Actually told me 10 years ago he wanted to be a doctor when he's done with the NBA. He's a smart guy, but he's a dumb basketball player because he doesn't recognize things coming his way. And if you actually do, why you put him in the post, Sal, is you, as soon as that double, just even if it's a little show or a little flash, bang, you pass it, now somebody's open. And if you don't get him in the post at least 7, 8, 9, 10 times a game, you're not going to create, in theory, as many open looks as you're trying to. So that's why you do. Even if he doesn't score, it's just to present a different look to the defense to free somebody up, usually Bridges or OG.
I'd be fine with that. The theory is great.
That's what I'm saying. I raised my hands in quotes.
He doesn't execute that.
I know.
At all.
Because he's soft down there.
I can, again, recall times where Ewing would get fed down low. He feels the double coming. Boom, you kick it out.
Yeah. And now they would miss the shot, those guys.
I was going to say, no one the shooters that this team has. I'm fine with running the offense through him if it could move. It doesn't. You get him the ball, and it's like, okay, he's in attack mode. He's grabbing it like he's a football. He might be better for the Giants or Jets than he is with the Knicks. He's holding the ball, basketball, like it's a football, and he's using his stiff arm to get to the hoop. And then defensively, he's hooking guys. Like, dude, what are you doing? Holy cow.
How does he play that way?
I don't
know. God damn it, man. Like, if I was his size, I know it's easy to say, but man, I just know if I was 7'1", 280, I'd play differently. You can't jump, all right? You can't move laterally. You can shoot. And I don't know how his game was created. It is baffling to me. It's wildly inconsistent. And to use your word from last night, incredibly maddening. Last time the Yanks had a 7-game lead in the division in May, 1998.
I mean, That's crazy. I'm surprised that it goes back that long.
Right? Well, the Red Sox were really good for a bunch of years. Tampa was competitive.
It does go to show. Seven-game lead in May is just not easy to get, no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
You know, generally, the other teams are hovering around the vicinity of being close, which is why a few years ago, where the day after Memorial Day, the Mets had like a 10.5-game lead over the Braves. I was like, dude, this division's over. And I think you could say that confidently now.
Honestly, do I think it's over? I do. I just don't think there's enough. Now, it's about the Yankees, but it's also about what's around them. I mean, Baltimore's awful. The Red Sox are banged up. The pitching hasn't paid the dividends I thought it might. The Rays are scrappy. They're playing better, but they're not the threat that I didn't think they'd be a massive threat. And Toronto, to me, whatever. So, the Yankees are going to, I believe, win this a lot easier than I thought. Remember, I wasn't even sure that I thought they were going to win the division.
Right.
When we got into this before the start of the season. I was worried. I'm like, God, I think they'll be a playoff team for sure. You know, 91, 92, 93 wins. But this could shape up to be, you know, high 90s, maybe sniff a triple figure win here.
I will say that I think the Red Sox still have a run in them. It's early enough. Red Sox trying to find their way. Now, is that going to be good enough? I mean, the Yankees hit a little bit of a lull at some point. Like, the season's, obviously, we know it's a long season.
Yeah.
I don't think, ultimately, the Yankees are going to get caught in the division. And if you feel that way coming into the year, then it's hard to not feel that way now when they're up seven games. I do think Boston is better than their record says. I think that would be the one team. I don't respect the Rays, don't respect the Blue Jays, and certainly don't respect the Orioles at this point. The Red Sox would be the one team I still think is going to have a run in there.
Yeah, I mean, they've had some injuries. Their first baseman's hurt. Yeah, Trevor Story's back, so that's good for them, and they did make some moves with the pitching. But I would say probably of the teams, if there was to somebody make a run, I'd probably agree with that. And listen, we've talked about him a lot. I don't trust him in a big spot, but Carlos Rodon's turned his Yankee career around in a massive way, dude. He's 7-3. His ERA is like 2.6. His WHIP is less than 1. He was on the precipice of becoming Ed Whitson after that first year. Remember that?
Yeah.
With the situation out in Anaheim a couple of years ago with the fans, and he was just a wreck. He is stabilized. He's been really, really good.
Still don't trust him.
No, I don't either.
He's been as nasty as you could be here for the Yankees as of late. BT and Sal on the fans. Get back to the calls about the Knicks and their loss in Game 4. Anthony's in Mineola. What's up, Ant?
What's up, boys? Always a pleasure.
Hey, bud.
So I've held off calling you guys this series because I just wanted to see exactly where they stand. So here's just an opinion. I'm no professional. I just watch a lot of basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's not one guy on the Pacers Josh Hart can guard. Not one. Right? That's the first problem that they're having. The second problem is you had a couple of calls ago that says Deuce McBride has to play. I know Deuce isn't shooting well and everything else, but the difference with Deuce is this. Miles Bridges should be guarding Naismith when they're playing defense. Because Mikal cannot guard anybody that has a quick first step and has good handles. It's just a fact. Against Detroit, he was guarding Cade Cunningham. Not that great of handles, right? So he did pretty good. Against the Celtics, he's guarding Brown. Brown's okay. He's a lot bigger than him, but he's quick enough to stay in front of him. And, you know, and Josh, we all love Josh. He does the little things and everything else. But Josh goes kamikaze. Who told Josh Hart he knows how to dribble the ball or knows how to run an offense? That's what I don't get.
Yeah.
Anthony, he's been doing that a lot of the Knicks. I'll let you finish your point. Throughout the course of the regular season, Jalen Brunson's not the on-the-ball point guard facilitator. Josh Hart has been. That's really his role. He's a facilitator with the basketball.
Okay, Sal, this is my point about Josh, right? Josh has no dribbles. He's north and south. That's it, right?
Yep. Transition.
So when with transition. But the problem is, if you ever notice, he goes right into three players every single time. For what? Pull the ball out and just relax. And then to go to your point about Jalen, anybody that could ever question anything about Jalen, Jalen needs to guard Namhart, and because Jalen can't guard no one else on the Pacers that plays that position, right? And Deuce has to start because he's the only guy on the Knicks, unfortunately or fortunately, that can stay in front of Halliburton. End the story. And I'm a big Tibbs fan, but that goes back to Tibbs. It does go back to Tibbs. I hope that my last thing I'll say is this. They better not lose at home tomorrow night. Because if they lose at home tomorrow night, it will be catastrophic. catastrophic.
The optics and the conversation will be an ugly one if they lose at home tomorrow night. I mean,
I don't think he survives that, Tibbs.
Oh, that's kind of where I'm going. I mean, if they were to lose tomorrow, particularly if it's another slop fest where they don't get back on D and they're a disjointed mess, whatever, and they give up a ton of points, I don't know how you keep Tom Thibodeau. I don't know how you do it.
I'm sticking to what I said before the postseason. I want to see at least, now there's the caveat that you could go get Mike Malone now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be fair to Tibbs to give this group one more chance after a full season of trying to gel and seeing what you have. Let them start next year, and if they don't look significantly better with a clear identity and plan early next year, then you make a change. The problem with that is Malone's probably going to be off the board.
Yeah, and, you know, I know there's some whispers, you know, mostly from Villanova people, Big East fans, well, maybe Jay Wright gets sucked up by somebody. Maybe, I don't know, I don't even want to really have the conversation. That's a big, big end-of-the-road finality conversation. But I do agree. Like, if they lose tomorrow, that conversation's happening the next day.
The reason why I think it's, again, we don't need to further the conversation today, but the reason why I think it's fair to bring up a change is because I'll just ask you the simple question. Forget about what you think, mm-hmm. your beliefs of Tibbs, or what I think.
Yep.
Do you think Tom Thibodeau has maximized the ability of each Knick player and make?
Absolutely not. No.
Like, absolutely not. I love Tibbs, and I'm saying it is clear as day in this series that he is not doing that. Now, you could blame the players, certainly, but to me, a lot of it's got to be on the head coach. Like, mm-hmm. hey, you can't do this well, so I'm going to have you do this. This is what you do well, so I want you to do this. Do not deviate from this script. This is our plan. This is option A. This is option B. You're on the perimeter. You're on the perimeter. You're on the ball. You're guarding him. You're like, he's just not, it's like, it's almost like a roll the ball out there situation on any given night. All right, yeah, Bridges hit a couple threes. Let's feed him and see if he can get hot. That's not an offensive plan. That's not an offensive plan at all. Defensively, the same thing. Halliburton, I said this in game, yeah, it was game one in the final play, where Halliburton had Bridges on skates.
Oh, yeah.
We can rip apart Cole Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson's defense,
yep.
but Anunoby and Bridges are supposed to be good defenders.
Yep.
Anunoby, they have no answer for Siakam, and Halliburton's got guys on Bridges in particular on skates.
You know, I'm trying to determine if, and I don't think that it's this, if OG and Bridges are just woefully overrated defenders, and I don't think that that's it, because we were talking about it last night watching the game. Jen's like, why are these guys always open? And I'm like, do I really fit into the schematics of the Knicks defense when they're down, whatever that? Yeah. But I did. And I said, I'm going to save it more for the air. Figured you'd be more interested than her. So my opinion and my theory is that they are much better defenders than they've shown, but they've got to cover up for the ultimate weaknesses of Brunson up top and Karl Anthony Towns down low, or when he gets in a mismatch up top as well, foul line extended. So it's making Bridges and OG look far worse because they're trying to cover for somebody's ass who was an awful defender. And then when they try to get back to their guy, they're getting beat. I know they're better than this.
Yeah, I mean, they have been better than this.
Yeah.
That's proven. Sal's in Keyport, New Jersey. What's up, Sal?
Hey, guys. What's happening?
Oh,
listen,
yeah.
It's very simple. I heard you guys poo-pooed me the last time I was on when I told you it was over. But they're soft. You said it before in the last segment. They're soft as a team. You know what they're missing? They're missing another big shooter. Somebody that's not afraid to go inside and do what they have to do. Can they do this?
Well, inside?
Well, that's
or
not a shooter. Yeah, well, it's a contradiction.
No. What I meant to say is they need to go. They need to another big shooter. Very simple. That's it. They have a good team, but I think Towns is soft. Can you be able to trade him in a package to go get Giannis?
Possible. Honestly, I believe that's absolutely going to be on the table.
Thank you for the call, Sal.
I do not know
that. You looked into it. What, the specifics with the...
Yeah, the numbers, they can make it work. By the way, I saw something from Shams yesterday, and I just saw the headline, and I clicked on it. I saw like 10 seconds of video. Not that Shams is always right, but he's piped in. He said he thinks that this NBA offseason is going to be as volatile and as much action as he's ever seen. That includes Giannis. Now, I'm not that interested in Kevin Durant, but that's a big name out there. Maybe Devin Booker. And will the Knicks be in the middle of that? I mean, depending upon how this series ends. I mean, even if it does end favorably, you're not winning the next series against the Thunder, so you're going to have to make some revisions. I think the Knicks are going to, I'm not saying blow it up, I'm not saying that.
Well,
they would have to overhaul a lot, and they have to know
it. But there are two theories. We could get more into this when we come back here, but there are two theories. We had it last year. Should the Knicks, you know, stick to the plan last year and see what it would be like healthy, or forward thinking, which is what they did, figuring, hey, even if we were healthy, we weren't going to win a championship. Mm-hmm. Let's go get Carl Anthony Towns now and Bridges. Now the question is this the group are you going to double down next year and say we could fix it?
I've seen enough.
Or determine now, hey, you know what? This group that we thought is just not the right fit. Let's blow it up.
I've seen enough. But it's easy for me to say it. There's contracts. There's other things they've got to, you know, navigate for me. I've seen enough.